Welcome to the show, Jack Caglione. The story that everybody in the Metro has been talking about over the last 24 hours, and it's what we're going to spend a great deal of time talking about tonight on After Hours, right here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside my producer tonight, Jacob Mustard. Cags is going to be in St. Louis tomorrow, making his debut at Busch Stadium. So we'll obviously be discussing that at length tonight on the program. Coming up at 8:30, I know a little bit later on in our show tonight, we're going to have Jalen Thompson on with us from the Kansas City Star. He covers the Royals as the beat writer for the Star. He'll be on with us. He's got a busy night tonight. He's got things of his own he's got to get figured out, and he's got to get himself ready to go to St. Louis tomorrow for a series that has somehow become even bigger than we all initially anticipated. But we'll talk about Cags. We'll talk about the Royals entirely, right? The month of May is now over. We'll take a look back at how the month played out, who had a good month, who didn't, and how we move forward from that. The special session for the stadium funding in Missouri has now officially begun. I think it broke in about 3 hours ago, right around 3 o'clock was when the special session began. It was called by Governor Mike Kehoe to talk about the stadiums for both the Chiefs and the Royals and what the state of Missouri can do to keep them here in, or keep them in the state of Missouri. They also, there was like construction projects and I think disaster relief funding, but I think everybody's kind of centered around what's going to happen with the Chiefs and the Royals on the Missouri side. Some national news: the College Football Playoff has announced their Hall of Fame nominees for this year. We'll kind of go through some of those. We've got the NBA. Of course, the NBA Finals is set after what occurred over the weekend, and a few Chiefs stories along the way. But let's kick it off with what everybody's talking about. Jack Caglione is going to be making his major league debut tomorrow. And I'm sure there are those who have heard me on these airwaves regularly, and they know what my opinion on this matter has been. I, coming into the year, had said, wait and let Jack Caglione make his debut next season. You hold on to an extra service year and this and that and the other thing. But I cannot say that I anticipated Jack Caglione performing the way that he has so far in his professional baseball career. I also cannot say that, or maybe I could have, but I was hoping that the outfield would not be overall this bad and force the hand of the Royals, and their offense would be this bad again and force their hand into trying to bring in a power bat and a run-producing bat. And that's what we've seen. It's sort of this perfect storm of events that has led to Jack Caglione being called up on June 1st, less than a year after he was drafted by the Royals 6th overall in 2024. Fun fact, Jack Caglione is the first Royals prospect to be called up within a year of being drafted since Bo Jackson. That's quite the name to attach yourself to. So that's the rarefied air that Jack Caglione is in. After opening up the year in AA with Northwest Arkansas, in which he hit .322 in 38 games, including 9 home runs and 43 RBIs, he gets called up to Omaha, where he had spent the last 2 weeks, basically, 12 games, a .319 batting average, 6 home runs, 13 RBIs. On the year so far, he's got 46 strikeouts to 24 walks, and that's across almost 230 plate appearances. So there are quite a few strikeouts there, but it's not an alarming rate by any means. And he does generate a good amount of walks. He averaged about a walk every other game when he was in AA, and he averaged just over a walk every other game during his time in Omaha. So there's a lot to break down with Jack Caglione. All right, get Brandon Finnegan. I had completely forgot about Brandon Finnegan in 2014. So I guess you could say first position player to be drafted with and called up to the show within a year since Finnegan. Was Finnegan a part of the September call-ups in 14? I think he may have been on the playoff roster in 14. That's a great point that you bring up. I completely forgot about Brandon Finnegan. He was a part of the Cueto trade the very next year, correct? In 2015. That got people in the text line letting me know. Our text line number is 913-586-7965. a part of this move, Jack Cagley, everybody was kind of discussing last night after Jeff Passan had announced that Cags was coming up to Kansas City, was what was the corresponding move going to be? Who was the guy being sent down or waived or DFA'd, what have you, with this situation? I saw a lot of people saying Michael Massey. I wasn't with Michael. I kind of thought, okay, this might be where the Royals decide that they're going to do something with Michael Lorenzen, because I said last week, I believe Noah Cameron is your number five starter. Until proven otherwise, he's earned it. In the four starts he's made this year, he's been unbelievable. He's done something that hasn't been done in 40 years in Major League Baseball, throwing at least 6 1/3 and giving up one or less earned runs in four consecutive starts to begin your MLB career. First guy to do that in 40 plus years. Instead, the Royals send Dairon Blanco. They are the ones that they take him, they optioned him out of Major League Baseball. So, a couple of things that this tells me. Number one is that they're still trying to find out what they want to do with that number five starter, obviously. Do they believe that it's still Lorenzen, or do they believe that it's Noah Cameron, and they're trying to find somewhere for the other to go? Because I don't think either one of them is in a position to go down to minor league baseball. Noah Cameron has earned the right to stay in Kansas City, in my opinion. Michael Lorenzen has been good enough to stay in Major League Baseball. Do you just stomach the money and waive him? I don't think that makes sense. Do you try to find a trade partner for a guy like Michael Lorenzen? I don't know. The second thing that this move tells me is that I don't think Cags is going to be the last guy that we see get called up from Omaha recently, in the near future. Like, I would say in the next 2 or 3 weeks, because Michael Massey has been playing very poorly as of late, although he did hit the ball slightly better in the month of May, I will admit. Cam Devaney is doing some really, really good things in Omaha right now, and I think a guy like Cam Devaney being called up and Massey optioned makes a lot more sense, because they play baseball in a similar fashion, right? Devaney is primarily known as a middle infielder, but he does have some utility capabilities. Nick Lofton is in that same boat. So if you were to send down a guy like Massey in exchange for Cags, you take some of your positional versatility away, because Massey and Lofton are both utility players. You take one away, you've only got one really on the base paths. And do we want to regularly continue to see India in the outfield? Because there are some defensive misgivings with Jonathan India. So hold on to Massey a little bit longer, see what happens there. And then if you make the move for Devaney back up to the big league, or for him to go up to the big leagues, then Massey being the call down makes a lot more sense, at least in that scenario. What Jack Caglione does here is immediately, as I said earlier, this is a guy who drives in runs. This is a guy who hits for power. It's funny, there was a MLB Network did a short like minute and 30 second snippet on Jack Caglione with Vinny Pasquantino, in which Vinny had some very complimentary things to say about Caglione. The first thing he said was that he had massive hands, and that is a major tool in Major League Baseball. So that's kind of the first thing. Number two, he mentioned the bat speed, and he mentioned the power. I think Vinny's exact words were, he touches the baseball and it flies out of the yard. It flies out of the park. That's something this Royals team is sorely missing. I'll give a very rare shout out here on the air. My younger brother and I were talking about this earlier today, and my younger brother Coleman said this to me, that the Kansas City Royals on the year thus far as a team, right, they are dead last in Major League Baseball. 34 home runs. That's it. 34 home runs as a team. Second to last in Major League Baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates with 43. The Chicago White Sox are 28th in the bigs with 47. The Colorado Rockies have 50 home runs. The 9-50 Colorado Rockies have 16 more home runs than the Kansas City Royals do. Now, the Royals as a team are typically going to be towards the bottom of Major League Baseball in home runs because it's incredibly hard to hit home runs at a Kauffman Stadium. It is one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks in all of Major League Baseball. So it shouldn't be surprising that this team isn't hitting a ton of home runs, but to hit that few is very alarming. Bobby Witt Jr. right now is on pace to hit less than 20 home runs. After back-to-back 30-30 seasons, he is on pace to hit less than 20 home runs. Salvador Perez is right now on pace to hit less than 20 home runs. This is a guy who 2 years ago set the Major League Baseball record for home runs in a season by a primary catcher with 48. He's now on pace to have less than 20. Vinny Pasquantino is this team's leader in home runs so far on the year, and he's got 8. That's it. 8. Bobby Witt Jr. has 6. Mikel Garcia with 5. Salvi with 4. Those are your top 4 home run leaders. 8, 6, 5, 4. Kyle Isbell's 5th on the team with 3 home runs. There is not one player on this Royals team with a slugging percentage over 500. Not a one. Bobby Witt Jr. at 481. He's the highest on the team. Mind you, Jack Caglione has, in the minor leagues so far for his career, a 517 slugging. And that includes this season where he had a 723 slugging in his 2 weeks with Omaha and a 553 slugging in Northwest Arkansas. He's got a 593 slugging so far this year. So what are the expectations for Jack Caglione this year? Where the Royals sit right now, they're 31 and so you're 60 games in. So you got theoretically 102 games of baseball left this year for Jack Caglione. Will he play in 102 games? Probably not. I think it's very, very unlikely that you see Cags play over the course of the next 102 games every single day. But I think that it's within the realm of possibility for Cags to play 75 or 80 games for the Royals this year. With this call-up, with the situation that surrounds it and the circumstances of it, I think it's very, very possible that Cags plays 75 or 80 games. Cags has 15 home runs in 50 games of minor league baseball this year. So that's just under a home run every third day. If Cags can hit a home run every 4 games on average and he plays between 75 and 80 games, a home run every 12 to 16 at-bats, you're looking at a guy with 20 home runs in 2/3 of a season in his first year in the big leagues. I think that with 20 home runs comes somewhere in the vein of 50 to 55 RBIs, depending on where he hits in the lineup. And if Jack Caglione could hit 250, somewhere between 18 and 20 home runs, 16 and 20 home runs, and 50 to 60 RBIs, playing 75 to 80 games, I think that that would be fantastic. That puts you at around 300 plate appearances, give or take, a little bit for Jack Caglione. That would immediately inject some run production and some power in this lineup. Couple of other things around this scenario. Where is Jack Caglione going to play? Just my observation. My guess, my prognostication is a lot of right field, obviously. Drew Waters has been playing some left field recently for this Kansas City Royals team and has proven that he's capable there in left field. So I think Waters in left, Isbell in center field, Jack Caglione in right field. Right field generally is known as that's the position where you put the guy that you either don't want to put a bunch of defensive pressure on, or maybe he's not as athletically gifted as the other outfielders, but you still want his bat in the lineup. That makes the most sense for me, for him to play right field and play right field primarily. I think there will be some days where he plays first base. If Vinny needs a day off, or say Salvi needs a day off and they want Vinny to DH, Cags will play some first base. I also believe that Cags will DH a little bit. I certainly do believe that he'll play some DH. Now, the problem with that is that he becomes one of, you know, three, four, five guys that DHs, right? Jonathan India is not the most defensively gifted player, so we've seen him DH this year. Michael Massey has the back injury problem, and it's really hard for him to play in the field every day, so he DHs some. Salvi is obviously not getting any younger, and he's really struggling at the plate, so by giving him an opportunity to DH, he can focus on what he does in the batter's box a little bit more than what he does in the field, especially with how good a fielder Freddie Fermin is and how well he's hit the ball over the last couple of years. So Salvi's going to be taking some DH opportunities. Massey's going to take some DH opportunities. India's going to take some DH opportunities. Even Vinny to some extent. And Lord knows what other injuries we might see occur over the next 100 games during the course of this season. So I think a lot of what we'll see him in is right field, some first base sprinkled in there, and some DH as well. I mentioned, what's the next possible move for the Kansas City Royals? I think that it inevitably is going to be Cam Devaney. You've given opportunities to Drew Waters this year already, who has taken advantage. Nick Lofton has looked pretty good so far. John Rave got off to a really slow start, but he had three hits in that last series over the weekend, including two during last night's game. You call up Cags. You've made a ton of pitching moves. Noah Cameron and Taylor Clark and Steven Cruz. The next name, I think, is Cam Devaney. And if you make that move within the month of June, I would say, within the next couple of weeks, what that allows you to do is evaluate where your team is at. And that gives you a very, very good inside baseball look at the trade deadline. Because you call up all your top prospects, guys that are ready, I should say, that are top prospects. And if you're still in need of a bat, you can go after it. If you do all these things and you really continue to struggle and you're five or six games under 500 or worse at the deadline, then it appears you're more seller than buyer. This is the Royals are kind of putting all their chips forward here and deciding, okay, we're trying to go inter-organizational baseball here, decide who, you know, trying to figure out who the best team is and seeing if you can plug these holes from within. If you can't, but you're still a playoff baseball team, all right, we can make a move at the deadline and try to bring in a bat that can help us get across the finish line. But, or if you make all these moves and it still doesn't work and you continue to slide, all right, we may just have to cut our losses and live to play another day, live to play for next year with these young prospects and this developmental pitching staff. Again, our text line number, 913-586-7965 is our number. We've got a lot of messages there. I'll take a look at those on the other side of this break and tell you one more part of this Jack Caglione story that I think is very, very notable and I think says a lot about where the Royals see Jack Caglione now and in their future. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here alongside Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan. Talking Jack Caglione here on the start of tonight's program, After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard producing tonight's program. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. We got a lot of messages during that first segment. I had mentioned that Jack Caglione is the first position player the Royals have called up to the big leagues within a year of being drafted since Bo Jackson. I had initially said the first prospect, which was not the case. Brandon Finnegan got called up in 2014 with the Royals. Somebody mentioned that he had pitched in both the College World Series and the World Series in Major League Baseball in the same calendar year, which is pretty astonishing. He was with the team, less than a year, just over. I mean, from the time he was drafted, the time he was traded, maybe just over a year, because he was dealt to the Cincinnati Reds in the Johnny Cueto trade, which worked out very, very well for the Royals, and maybe not so much for the Cincinnati Reds. Not that they would have been able to hold on to Johnny Cueto after the season would have ended, so they cut their losses and tried to get what they could out of it. He pitched with the Reds for four seasons, three full seasons. His first year at 23 in 2016, he went 10-11 with a 3.98 ERA across 31 starts. So, I mean, not terrible, but then injuries started to kind of factor in. He only started four games in 2017 at a 4.15 ERA, and then he pitched in five games, five starts in 2018, and he went 0-3 with a 7.40 ERA and never saw Major League Baseball again. He was drafted 17th overall out of TCU in 2014 and ended up pitching seven games for the Royals in 2014. He pitched he pitched in the World Series as well, which is just incredible. Pitched throughout that postseason run for the Royals and getting to a World Series. Somebody said the new nickname for Jack Caglione is the SWAT stick. Boy, I hope so. You know, I've heard lots of different nicknames for Jack Caglione, and I hope all of them stick. I hope he's that talented and that all of them stick. I was talking about what my expectation for Cags was, and I said somewhere around 75 or 80 games, maybe up to 85. And somebody said, no way, he's just playing 75 or 80 of the 102 games unless he gets injured. He'll be in the lineup every day besides the standard day off. And, I mean, if that's the case, right, if he plays 90-plus games out of these 100 that are left, then that likely means that he's hitting the ball pretty well. I'm just sort of hesitant to put that much pressure on a young guy. You know, it's funny, in talking with people since the announcement was made last night, I've had multiple people mention to me that it feels like there has been more pomp and circumstance surrounding Jack Caglione's rise to the Royals than we saw with Bobby Witt Jr. And I think that that's a fine line. I think by putting too much pressure on a guy, it can become a lot. You know, I know, you know, same person said it's the nature of the beast to put a lot on somebody like that, but he's not coming up to sit multiple games a week. Maybe not. You know, I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, if it's a three-game series, he plays two games and maybe DHs the third or plays first base for a day. I can't say I see him being an everyday right fielder this year either. That's just my point of view. I don't know. Somebody else said, did Cags pitch at all at any point while he was in the minor leagues? No, I don't believe he did. When the Royals drafted him, I know that there was some conversation about it because, I mean, he does throw the ball hard, man. I mean, he was throwing high 90s, you know, 98, 99 during his time in Florida. He had multiple double-digit strikeout games during his time with the Gators. But I think when the Royals drafted him, it was because of his bat, and that's where they wanted to put the focus, and I think that's where we go from here. You know, how it expands itself, I think, is yet to be determined. I think it's very unlikely that we ever see Jack Caglione pitch, or at least pitch with any kind of regularity. Right? Maybe there's an instance where the Royals are up 13-1, or unfortunately, there might be instances where they're down something like that, and, you know, say Cags is off that day or whatever, they might throw him out in a relief pitching role just to kind of give him a taste and those sorts of things. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But just talking about Jack Caglione, I mentioned that there's one more part of this story in the circumstances around calling Cags up now that's very, very interesting. The Royals, in making this move yesterday and officially announcing it today, have called up Jack Caglione prior to the Super 2 deadline. And what that means is, in terms of arbitration. So typically, with a player in Major League Baseball, they have to accrue 3 years of service time in Major League Baseball before they become eligible for salary arbitration, meaning the Royals give a number, Caglione's people give a number, and then they go to an independent third party, a judge, who determines which side wins or what the monetary value of that person's contract will be the next year or 2 years, and so on. It's typically a year-by-year basis with arbitration. What Super 2 is a designation that allows a select group of players to become eligible for arbitration before they reach 3 years of service time in Major League Baseball. So by making this move now, Jack Caglione could be eligible for arbitration after next season, after what would be deemed his second year of Major League Baseball. To qualify for Super 2, a player must rank in the top 22% in terms of service time among those who have amassed between 2 and 3 years in the majors. The specific cutoff date varies on a year-to-year basis. But as of now, with the Royals making this move, it is very, very possible that Jack Caglione could be up for arbitration as soon as not this upcoming offseason, but the following offseason between the 26 and 27 seasons. What that tells me is the Royals are desperate for run production. They're desperate for a power bat. They need somebody that can put the ball into the gaps and put the ball out of the yard and drive in runs. Because if you look at the numbers, and we'll do that here in just a little bit, looking at the Royals in the month of May, they actually hit the ball fairly well as a team. Their team batting average was better than it was in April. The problem is they hit extremely poorly with runners in scoring position, and their slugging numbers were in the bottom of the barrel. The second thing this tells me is that the Royals see a long-term play with Jack Caglione. This is not a situation that we would have seen unfold under previous ownership groups of the Kansas City Royals. I just don't see it. They would have taken every possible opportunity to increase service years, to increase arbitration hearings, and those sorts of things to hold on to a guy as long as humanly possible before having to pay him a huge chunk of money. And then when that happens, they wouldn't pay the guy a huge chunk of money. They would let somebody else do it, and that guy would inevitably walk. Lorenzo Cain, Alcides Escobar, you know, Ben Zobrist, Zach Greinke, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas. The list goes on and on. That doesn't seem to be the case with this ownership group. They seem bought in to keeping their guys around and trying to win and win for a very long period of time. And I think that that's incredibly, incredibly exciting. After hours here on 96.5 The Fan, when we come back, we're going to look at the Royals in review. We'll take a look back at the month of May, who played well, who struggled, where we see this team unfolding here in the early parts of the month of June. That's coming up next. Logan Weber alongside Jacob Mustard. This is After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Big news for the Kansas City Royals. Jack Caglione is officially with the big league club. The announcement, the report came yesterday via Jeff Passan, who was a writer for the Kansas City Star back 20 years ago and has now become the most reliable source for information, maybe in all of sports, but especially in Major League Baseball. So everybody's talking about this move, right? I've seen the vast majority of people are incredibly excited and very much for it, but not everybody. Apparently, I just had somebody in the text line here, 913, who says the Royals made yet another mistake with a minor league prospect. Oh, this should be good. They needed to give him the Will Myers deal. Trade for more valuable pieces that lead to a world title. Cags alone won't bring the Royals to the playoffs. Plus, he's a first base DH and those positions are filled. Him trying to learn outfield in the majors will be as bad as MJ trying to learn it and have the same effect. He doesn't have the skill set to play the vast outfields in Kauffman and would have been better used as a piece in a blockbuster trade before his warts showed. Wow. I mean, incredibly detailed. I disagree, but I mean, you know, your opinion hopefully won't be, but very well could be true. I have expressed numerous times my concern with Jack Caglione in the outfield. And not that he can't do it at some point, but the guy's been in professional baseball for less than a year. That's how long he's been. I mean, he's been here for in pro baseball for 10 months trying to figure out how to play the outfield and really didn't start doing it until late in his time in AA and late in his time in AAA. So I do think that there's something to be said for that. I think Jack Caglione is a little bit more athletically gifted and has better arm talent than MJ Melendez does, but There's also something to be said for the fact that Cags is going to be playing right field in Kansas City. MJ was playing left field. You have to be a gifted glove in left field in Major League Baseball. You have to be, because the majority of hitters are right-handed. Being the right fielder is typically reserved for the guy that you don't have as much faith in his defensive capabilities. That's where right field is. And he's not there for his glove. He's there for his bat. Honestly, MJ Melendez was never there for his bat either. I just think that he was like, hey, he's probably a little bit too good to be playing AAA at this point, at least we thought. And they wanted to give him an opportunity. I was always of the opinion that they should have continued to allow MJ to catch as well, because I thought he made more sense as the heir apparent to Salvi. But Salvi's had this second half career resurgence, although this year's been slow, and Freddie Fermin has burst onto the scene. I think Jack Caglione is far too valuable to do what the Royals did with Will Myers. You know, Will Myers came up as he was obviously a high prospect. I mean, drafted in the third round, though, in 2009, as a catcher, right? He ended up becoming an outfielder and a first baseman, but he was a catcher at that point in his career. And what the Royals did, it ended up turning out to be something that nobody really saw coming. He was traded for two starters, which obviously the Royals do not need, in James Shields and Wade Davis. Now, James Shields, you know, he became a solid, I guess you could say, starting pitcher for the Royals, but he didn't necessarily wow you by any stretch. You know, he never had an all-star caliber year in Kansas City. He had two really, really good years in 2013, 2014, 13-9 with a 3-1-5, 14-8 with a 3-2-1. Honestly, in hindsight, the bigger part of that deal was the Wade Davis part, which when the Royals traded for him, he was struggling as a starting pitcher. He came to Kansas City, and those struggles as a starting pitcher continued. And then he goes to a relief pitching role and wows everybody on planet Earth, and had a 3-year stretch where his ERA was south of a 1.5. Yes, that trade worked out very, very well. But Jack Caglione is a bigger need for the Royals at key positions than Will Myers was. Where was Will Myers going to play in 2013 and 14? Right? It's not like he was traded away for other position player pieces. He was traded away for pitching because that's what the Royals needed. That's not what this Royals team needs. They need a bat. And to trade a bat for a bat doesn't make a ton of sense at the time being. But I mean, who knows, right? I mean, everybody's got an opinion. Somebody says to tell that guy to STFU. You make out the acronym for yourselves. That guy is special. I'm not going to read too far into that. Somebody else says, no one knows how it will pan out. I think those who are hesitant have seen too many of these can't-miss prospects flop. I agree. That's my concern, is that, you know, people are so excited for this move. And they should be. They absolutely should be. But there's a lot of folks, I think, that are trying to put the cart before the horse here a little bit. I mean, dear God, if you would have looked on social media this afternoon, and you had, it would have been unbelievable. Because Jeff Passan was on the Pat McAfee show, and Jeff Passan, on that show, live on national television, said that Jack Caglione has the type of power that only Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani have. Okay, that's not going to slow down expectations. That's not going to slow down the pressure that's being put on this 22-year-old to come in and be this world-beating bat that the Royals desperately need. I don't think that's entirely fair to put a lot of pressure on a guy like this. And it is interesting. You know, in talking with people, I don't think Bobby Witt Jr. had this amount of pomp and circumstance surrounding him when he got the call to the big league club. But I also think that a big part of that, of why people are seemingly more excited about Cags than they were about Bobby Witt Jr., because when Bobby Witt Jr. got called up, the Royals were a bad baseball team. the expectations were on the floor. They were below the floor. They were buried. Nobody thought the Royals were any good, right? Oh, you know, they're going to lose 90 to 100 games. That was the theory. That was the thought process when Bobby Witt Jr. got the call up. Oh, they might get a little bit better. You give a guy like that an opportunity to build himself up. That's not the case with Jack Caglione. He's getting called up to provide offense for a playoff caliber baseball team that desperately needs it in the midst of one of their worst hitting and run drive, you know, run scoring spells that they've been in this year. That's a lot of pressure to put on a guy. A lot of pressure. He's got a ton of pop, man, obviously. He's got like the third highest exit velo of any player in baseball this year. That's minor leagues, major leagues, all of it. He's got unbelievable pop. But he's 22 years old. He's never taken an at-bat in Major League Baseball. Everybody slow down just a minute. Can he be a great player? Can Jack Caglione be a consistent 30-40 home run guy? Absolutely he can. Can he do it at 22 years old in his first experience in the big leagues? Let's wait a minute and see. I do find it interesting, though. Jack Caglione is actually older than Bobby Witt Jr. was when he made his debut. You wouldn't think that because Bobby played a full season of minor league baseball. Cags didn't. But because Cags was a college guy, he's actually about a half a year older. He will be, by the time he makes his debut tomorrow night, he will be a half year older than Bobby Witt Jr. was when he made his. 22 and a half versus about, you know, just under 22 years old, which is pretty unbelievable. Jack is a stud. Watch him live. I'm looking forward to watching him live. Believe me. 913 says he's a can't miss prospects. Issues probably go back to that texter having too much hope in Mondesi. Oh, Adalberto Mondesi. What a name. What a name. Yeah, everybody thought he was going to be that dude, especially after that 2020 season, the COVID shortened year. He was unbelievable. And everybody's like, oh, Adalberto Mondesi, here we come. And then couldn't stay healthy. And he had the PED suspension. And then when he came back from all of it, he couldn't hit. It just blew up in everybody's face. 913-586-7965 is our number. More conversation about Jack Caglione coming up, I'm sure. Royals baseball as well as the special session that has begun in the state of Missouri trying to figure out the stadium plan for both the Chiefs and the Royals in the Show Me State. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber here with you alongside producer Jacob Mustard. Your home for Kansas City sports. It's 96.5, The Fan. We've been talking a lot here in hour number one about the news last night of Jack Caglione being called up to the big leagues. And, you know, I, for the most part, I think a lot of it has been positive. You've seen some negative comments. We talked about one of them earlier. And there's always, I don't think that it's unnecessary to have those sorts of reactions. There should be some amount of concern or pause even with a prospect like this making a debut. Right. Firstly, because of how quickly it's happening, which has become more commonplace in recent years, which I find kind of fascinating. You've seen, you know, guys like Jackson Holliday and Paul Skeens and now Jack Caglione and others, you know, who are getting called up almost immediately after they're drafted. There have been so many guys that you look and you're like, oh, he's a can't miss prospect. And he ends up being kind of a miss. You know, it does happen. And that's unfortunate. We've seen it with the Royals, right? We've seen these can't miss prospects make their way up to the show and it doesn't work out, or these guys that are drafted and they have all of these expectations that follow him, right? When Luke Hochhaver was drafted, right? Everybody's like, all right, here we go. This guy can be an ace. He can be a Zach Greinke like pitcher. And that obviously didn't work. People were very, very high on Bubba Starling, and that obviously didn't pan out. I don't think Cags is as risky as some of those guys. I really don't. And maybe that's just me being glass half full or biased, or I don't know. But we can't forget about the fact this guy's a prospect. I think it's unfair for those people out there who are saying, you know, Jack Caglione could hit 30 home runs this year. He could drive in 80. He could hit 300. That would be great, but that shouldn't be everybody's expectation for this guy. That shouldn't be your expectation, because if that's your expectation for him, it's way too high. Way too high. Expectations need to be at a respectful, I guess is a word that you could put it, you could put there, a logical place for it. They need to be reachable expectations. I say if he hits 250, if he hits 20 home runs, if he drives in 50, 55, 60 RBIs, that would be great. And I think that would be enough to be a solid contributing piece for this Royals team. That's my hope. I don't know. I mentioned Adalberto Mondesi. Mondesi never should have changed his name. Mondy would have been okay if he had stayed Raul Jr. It's tough. Somebody said, Jack is him. Okay. I believe you. From what I've seen so far, he appears to be him. The Hosmer comparisons are not it. If his personal performance is like Hosmer, that's a disappointment. He's better than that. In certain avenues, yes. If he has power numbers like Eric Hosmer, I think that's disappointing. I look at Jack Caglione and I look at Eric Hosmer, and I see two very different baseball players. Jack Caglione has way more power in his bat. Way more power in his bat than Eric Hosmer ever did in his career. Hosmer's career high for home runs was 25, and he hit 25 in back-to-back seasons in 16 and 17 with the Royals. I think that Jack Caglione is closer to a 35-40-plus home run hitter than Eric Hosmer. Eric Hosmer, though, is during his time in Kansas City, was a career 284 hitter. I don't think Jack Caglione's a guy that hits 284 for his career. Jack Caglione seems like the kind of guy to me that hits somewhere between 260, 275. You know, if a regular season for Jack Caglione, for me, the way I picture it and from what I've seen from him, is like 260, 38 homers, 105 RBIs. So he's a better power bat. He's got less contact, I think. He strikes out a little bit more than Haas does. He doesn't walk as much as maybe Hosmer did during the biggest portions of his career. Strong arm. I mean, unbelievably strong arm based obviously on what we saw him do pitching wise at the University of Florida, but he doesn't feel this. He's not the kind of glove that Haas was. I mean, Hosmer won 4 gold gloves. So I think there are some give and take with that comparison. I think that it's an improper comparison. If he can be as effective as Eric Hosmer was in a very different light, great. If he can be effective with his bat and with his arm strength, if he's playing the outfield and keeping runners in spots, right? If it makes it harder for a guy to extend a fly out to right field from a guy at second base to third base, great. If it makes a guy hesitant to try to run on him at home plate on a pop fly, fantastic. I think that they can both be, that Jack can be as effective and important for these Royals teams now and in the future as Hosmer was, but doing it in a much different way than the other has done or did or could do. 913-586-7965 is the number. Much more coming up here. Hour number two is on the way next. It's After Hours. Logan Weber here alongside Jacob Mustard on 96.5 The Fan.